Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks. Another tennis podcast for you. This one to look ahead to the Davis Cup finals, where Matt is ready and raring to go in Malaga. Matt, tell us about your weather.
The weather's great. I can't hide that. It is low 20s Celsius, sunny. Things are good.
And this is indoors, this tennis, is it?
Unfortunately, yes, the tennis is indoors. It would be quite nice to be outdoors, but no, the tennis is inside, so I'll be making the most of my mornings, I think, because the tennis doesn't start most days until later in the afternoon. So I will try and get some vitamin D in the mornings.
Okay, and Catherine, you've arrived back from Turin, which was quite nice for a week, wasn't it? Although you were indoors the whole time too. How are you? How is your journey back?
Well, I'm wrapped in an electric blanket. The journey back was fine, albeit it started rather too early for my liking, but I have had a nap and I am sufficiently rejuvenated to pod. What happens from that point onwards, we'll find out.
Okay. Good. Right. Well, I'm ready.
I'm wearing a hoodie, a dressing gown, and have wrapped myself in a heated blanket.
Textbook.
So,
You're ready. You're ready. You're ready for a podcast done in those circumstances. Listen, we've got lots to talk about because Matt's been in all the press conferences that the teams have gone through over the course of the last 24 hours. The tournament starts tomorrow, the Davis Cup finals. I think what we'll do first is just run you through the draw, so you are fully across the eight teams involved, and also just get a sense of what the halves of the draw look like and what we might have in store generally. Because, you know, I sort of forgot, really, when we had the playoffs a little while ago. I mean, they were home and away ties, really exciting stuff. We were concentrating a lot on Great Britain, which had Dan Evans at the forefront of it, playing that match against Arthur Feast, and then in the doubles, coming back and winning. And, of course, Dan Evans then got injured, and he's not actually able to play now, which is a great shame for him. I was actually reading a headline, I think, from Stu Fraser's article in The Times, saying that Dan Evans is going to Malaga as a fan. Which is very nice. Or did you tell me that, Catherine?
I think I told you that, unless
I can step in here.
Unless Stu Fraser is okay.
Because I heard that originally from Catherine this morning, and then I read it from Stu Fraser in The Times this afternoon. So,
oh. Both.
I did not give that story to Stu. I'm not leaking to The Times.
No, he's got an interview with him.
We don't need an inquiry. David, I can't believe two separate sources have got Dan Evans' information that you have.
Yes, I'll be having words with him about not giving me that scoop. So thanks a lot, Dan. Anyway, yeah, so he's on his way. Catherine and Stu Fraser are impeccable sources for us there. And the lineup is going to be Canada against Finland, which is, I mean, what a great first tie that is. The defending champions up against Finland, who, honestly, when you said a few weeks ago, Matt, that Catherine should go for Finland to win the Davis Cup in order to try to make up the ground and actually win the newsletter predictions competition, I thought was a joke. in as much as I didn't realise at the time that Finland were actually in this. I mean, it's a heck of an achievement. But then when I actually looked at their team and a couple of the players they've got, Ruusuvuori and Heliovaara in the doubles, I mean, these are good players, actually.
Shall we do the Finland section? Because I have fun.
Okay.
I have fun Finland stuff to tell you, actually, because...
Excellent.
Honestly, they are kind of what all the buzz is about at the moment in the sort of start of this event. You know, Novak Djokovic has only just arrived in Malaga. He was pitched at the airport today. Jannik Sinner's coming later, and they don't play till later in the week. But, you know, we've got Finland opening off these Davis Cup finals, as you said, against the defending champions in Canada. And I think there's so much buzz about Finland because we are expecting a lot of Finnish fans to be here. That is
great.
Because there is a little town near Malaga, about 25 kilometres away, Fuengirola, where there is the second largest colony of Finns in the world outside of Sweden. They sort of have all come here for the sun. And there's this sort of little group and collection of Finns, and they are bringing, according to Jarno, the media manager of the Finnish team, who I had a lovely conversation with earlier. He is a Tennis Podcast listener. Hello, Jarno. They're bringing 14 busloads of Finns over from that town to Malaga tomorrow for the Davis Cup finals. And that is on top of 1,000 who are coming over from Finland. The Federation sold 1,000 tickets within 3 days when they qualified in September. So we're expecting maybe between 1,000, 2,000 Finns tomorrow in the arena. And this is just such a big deal for them. You know, tennis is not a big sport in Finland whatsoever. Jarno tells me it's about the 13th sport in that country, behind, you know, sports you would expect to be way ahead of tennis, like ice hockey and skiing and F1 and sort of team events that they've won lots of medals in the Olympics. So this is a really big deal. You know, this is tennis on mainstream TV, sort of kind of the biggest deal that the national team has ever been in Finland. They obviously had Jarkko Niemanen reach, you know, pretty high up in the rankings about 15 years ago or so. He was quite a big deal then, but this is absolutely the biggest that tennis has been since then. And yeah, they're gonna back it up with a lot of Finns coming here to support. I'm really excited to sort of see what sort of atmosphere they can create.
Can I change my prediction, Matt? Because A, that all sounds really fun, and B, I've just done the maths, and Finland really is the only way I can overtake David.
Well, I've told you the fun part. Can I tell you the slight concern?
Oh, God, is Emil Ruusuvuori injured? I take it all back.
And plus, Matt's already gone for Finland, Catherine, because he wants the 250 points.
Mm. So I noticed that Ruusuvuori retired from his most recent match, which was actually a challenger played in Helsinki a couple of weeks ago. I did some digging and found out that it was a shoulder injury. Asked him about it in the press conference, and he said, quote, "We are doing everything possible for making it on court tomorrow for the match," which I didn't think sounded that promising, unless it's some kind of, you know, bluff and they're keeping their cards close to their chest and he's actually okay. I've seen him hitting, but that's obviously very different to a match conditions. Yeah, but there is some concern there about Emil Ruusuvuori, who obviously is their big number one player. So,
okay, well, wishing him luck, and you and your prediction, Matt. Mm.
There was also a very sweet moment in the press conference where one of the journalists asked a question to Harry Heliovaara and mentioned his blog, and Harry Heliovaara's face lit up, and he said, I can't believe you're reading my blog. Nobody reads that. And it's in Finnish.
Do we know what he talks about?
What's in the blog?
I think his blog is entitled Living the Dream. And I think maybe it's about his sort of journey as a as a professional player, and the question was about, you know, is this, you know, the sort of culmination of that dream, being here at the Davis Cup Finals? And he basically said yes, that, you know, he's having the time of his life, part of this Finnish team. It is a cool story.
I always remember him being a real character last year in the ATP Finals when he was alongside Lloyd Glasspool. And every time he would do an interview, he would just sort of take over. He had a really, really good personality. Mm.
They're one of the teams that's splitting up, yeah, incidentally.
Yeah, there is so much going on in the doubles world. We're going to have to devote quite a section to that at the start of the year, aren't we? I tell you, I got goosebumps when you were describing that number of people that are coming from Finland. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what this event needs. It's so much more difficult for the countries that have got a really, really long way to go, of course. But that will get this thing off to a heck of a start. And, you know, when you were saying that quite a lot of them live in this area or come to this area for the sun, it struck me. I remember going to Stockholm in late October once, and how dark it was. I mean, today we've gone and walk at about 4:30 p.m. here in the UK, and it was so dark and dreary. And I mean, that's a massive issue, of course, in Scandinavia. And I remember the complete flip side being in a place called Åland in July, which I think is between Finland and Sweden, where there was a Champions Tour event once, and it just didn't get dark at night time in the summer. And that was an incredible experience. But yes, I can understand why Malaga's popular at the moment.
Doesn't it have... sorry, this is a downer. I think it has the highest suicide rate in the world, Finland, doesn't it? Because of the darkness. I believe it's sort of got the contrasting... So it always comes very near the top of quality of living lists, as Scandinavian countries tend to. They've got things figured out over there, I think. But just because of how long and dark the winters are, I believe if that might not be a current statistic that they're at the top, but they certainly have been and probably remain somewhere near.
There's a very good book about Scandinavia called The Almost Nearly Perfect People, which sort of gets to the heart of that, you know, they always rank towards the top of quality of living, but then there are these sort of slightly darker sides to it. And yeah, I would highly recommend that book. And just on sort of fans coming over as well, I had a flashback to last year where the Netherlands had loads of fans here as well, and they were all dressed in orange suits, which now just feels like they're sort of all going to be dressed up as big Yannick Sinner fans, doesn't it? Because that's very much the vibe for Yannick Sinner. So maybe, you know, and Netherlands are playing Italy, so it's going to be it's going to be a real sort of clash, I suppose, there. But yes, that is the hope, that a lot of these nations can start bringing over their own sets of fans, because we're going to need it, because this is the first ever Davis Cup Finals without a home nation. You know, Spain are not here. They lost in the group stages. And, you know, I think having Djokovic is going to do a lot to sort of not fully make up for that, but he is going to bring a lot of buzz to this event, and just attention to this event, I suppose. But yeah, hopefully the other countries can sort of provide the atmosphere, because yeah, there's no doubt about it. It's a bit of a shocker not to have the home nations at the Davis Cup Finals. That's what the tournament's all about, atmosphere.
Actually, I'm just going to stick with that tie at the moment, Matt, because we mentioned that Finland are playing against Canada, who come in as defending champions. It's going to be interesting to see what that defence is like, because they've got Felix Auger-Aliassime back, who was the preeminent player a year ago. I mean, he has never looked more convincing than he did a year ago. Every tie he went into, it was almost Djokovician, the way he would take to the court and you would just expect him to deliver. And that's why it's been really such a disappointment the year that has followed, obviously impacted by injury as well. But he doesn't have Shapovalov with him this time. I suppose Ruusuvuori being injured really makes Canada big favourites. But actually, if he'd been fit, or with their doubles prowess as well. I mean, it's not an absolute shoo-in, is it, that Canada win that tie?
I agree. I mean, I'm sure we'll go through this draw, and I think it's a very open tournament. I don't see a clear favourite, and I think in that top half where you've got Canada and Finland and Australia and Czechia, I think they're all just pleased to be in that half because Djokovic and Sinner are sort of in the other section. So it does make those ties, I think, particularly open. I think for Canada, I heard that Pospisil is a little bit injured, so I'm maybe not expecting him to play, but even though he is here. But I think Félix Auger-Aliassime will be backed up by either Gabriel Diallo or Alexis Galano, who were integral to getting Canada to the finals, because Auger-Aliassime didn't play the group stages in September, and it was Diallo and Galano who did. And of those, I would guess they would go with Diallo. He's had the slightly sort of better wins. He's beaten Dan Evans a couple of times this year. But both of them got their career best wins during the September stage of the Davis Cup. So they've both shown up in this event before. So, you know, you're right. They are weaker prospect, I would say, than last year when they had Shapovalov and when they had Auger-Aliassime in the form of his life. And now there's quite a lot of uncertainty around him. But yeah, it's a pretty even tie, I would say, against Finland. Otto Virtanen is the number two for Finland, who again has sort of stepped up in this competition before. So I think that's a very even number two singles match that really could go either way. And then we see if Ruusuvuori's fit or not.
Otto Virtanen. What a good name that is. Okay, well, so that match is going to take place on Tuesday, so tomorrow at 4 p.m. local time. First couple of days, just a single tie, mm-hmm. I believe, Matt, and then there are two on Thursday, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. They ease you in, and then they bombard you with two on Thursday, and then it's back to one for the rest of the tournament. It's quite a manageable schedule, actually.
Okay, well, and also, I suppose, this being a contrast to Billie Jean King Cup, you get all of these ties with all eyes on them because it's going to be one at a time, all on the same court. You know, that's quite a difference.
Yeah, definitely. And knockout straight away is obviously the other big difference to the Billie Jean King Cup. I spoke to Wesley Kuhlhoff in the press conference today and sort of asked him, you know, as a doubles specialist, does he like this new format? Because on the one hand, when you get to the doubles, it really, really matters. You know, it is everything. It is the decider after the two singles. But you could also be here the whole week as a doubles specialist and not play, you know. And he did say that, well, the term he used actually to describe that was shitty. So, you know, he's he's not a massive fan of having to hang around and train and not play. But I think he does appreciate the fact that when there is doubles, it is elevated to sort of yet another level. So I think that's a sort of balance that all the doubles players are sort of dealing with.
Okay. So we've then got Australia against Czechia on Wednesday, also at 4 o'clock local time. That looks like a very interesting clash, Matt, because once again, that There are good players. There's Alex de Minaur, who's been such a stalwart for that team, of course. But I don't know, there's not absolute cast iron guarantee big name players that are going to just take over these ties.
Absolutely, yes. Australia have a very similar team to last year. In fact, they did have the same team up until this morning when Tanasi Kokkinakis was swapped out and Alexei Popperin came in. Interestingly, all of their singles players, so de Minaur, Max Purcell, Jordan Thompson, Alexei Popperin, are way higher ranked than they were this time last year. You know, they have all really done well in singles this year. And of course, they reached the final last year. So I think Australia are in a good position to be able to get back to that again. I think Alex de Minaur is the highest ranked player in the top half. So, you know, I think that you'd be backing him to win his singles matches. And then they've got Ebden and Purcell in the doubles, who, of course, won Wimbledon in 2022. So they're pretty strong, and they're sort of built in Leighton Hewitt's image, aren't they? You know, you just... He's a little bit scary as a Davis Cup captain. He just, because there's this tension, because he loves the Davis Cup so much, but he hates the new format. Like, he despises it. He was asked today, you know, what he would do, what tweak he would make to the format, and he just said, "I'll change it back." Like, it was just, there's no other thought in his mind. Like, but at the same time, he wants all his players to, you know, play with the pride and passion. And, you know, you could play a real drinking game during an Australian press conference with however many times they mention playing for the green and gold. You know, they just love it. And Hewitt instills that in them. So I really think Australia are sort of set up to do well here. But of course they are playing Czechia, who have the best player in the world, Tomáš Mahač, on their team, and Jiří Lehečka, who, you know, has a big game and is sort of capable of sort of hitting people off the court, I think. So Czechia were great in September. They didn't lose a single match. They won all of their group stage matches 3-0. And they're a young team. They're pretty hungry. So I think this is a very, very even tie as well.
Catherine, who do you think are going to win those top two matches? Canada, Finland, and Australia, Czechia. I mean, obviously Dimonor's the standout singles player, but Mahač, I know we joke about it, but he is capable of so much, that guy. You know, I mean, he first came to my attention when he beat Dan Evans, actually, in the Davis Cup. I think maybe two, three years ago, something like that. And I just remember seeing every time Evans came into the net, he got past. It was a nightmare for him, a nightmare matchup. And then we just happened to walk past his court, Mahač's practice court in Australia on the first day we were there, jet lagged, and we just saw him play one of the most mind-boggling up-close rallies I think I've ever seen. And we just declared him the best player in the world. But he is really, I mean, he is really, really good. Do you think either Canada or Australia will not be there in the knockout stages that follow?
I think Australia will be there. I think if Emil Ruusuvuori is fit, I really can see Finland progressing there. But it sounds like a very big if. I remain unconvinced by the form and confidence of Félix Auger-Aliassime. Now, he could return to the scene of one of his greatest career moments, and that could boost him and uplift him. And, you know, in the way that we were talking about with Rajiv Ram and Joe Salisbury yesterday, and how great they are at winning the same title over and over, those memories might bolster him, or they might add some pressure and remind him what a different place he was in 12 months ago and enhance his crisis of confidence. I really don't know. But it is a big question mark for me over Félix Auger-Aliassime. Add in the Pospisil question mark, and fitness permitting, I think Finland have quite a big chance in that tie. But I do see Australia delivering.
Hmm. Do you feel like Canada probably have got to win that number one singles, really? I mean, again, to be fair to the other two fellas, they were the ones who got them through into the finals. But, you know, Auger-Aliassime is going to be wanting to win that one. So it'll be fascinating. That's what I love about the event generally is the competitiveness and the different possibilities. The third of the quarterfinals pitches Italy against the Netherlands. That's at Thursday at 10 in the morning, local time. Crikey, that'll be 9 in the morning here. Yannick Sinner is going to be there, Matt. It's a big ask, isn't it, for him and Djokovic to come straight out of the final in Turin and straight onto the scene there. But, I mean, didn't Djokovic, he played in the qualifying, didn't he? And he came straight out of the US Open and won a match immediately for them.
He did, yeah. And I think he was perhaps expecting to sort of need to be there because they were in a group with Spain. And I think everyone was thinking Carlos Alcaraz would be there. But then Alcaraz wasn't there and Djokovic was, and he ended up beating Davidovich Fokina, I think. So I think Djokovic is, again, I think that's where experience helps. I think he's going to be used to, you know, playing a different event, different conditions, different pressures. I think it's going to be a lot for Jannik Sinner. You know, he's not going to have the home crowd, for example. He's just come off a loss. I know he was absolutely brilliant in Turin, but he ended on a loss, whereas Djokovic ended on a high, and it just feels a bit easier maybe for Djokovic to just carry that through. And he's been very vocal about how much he wants to win this for Serbia. And I think it's going to be one of the interesting things about the Davis Cup this week, Djokovic trying to do it for Serbia, but it's not entirely in his control. You know, he can control his singles match, absolutely. But it's possible then that he'll have to step onto a doubles court and try and win that as well. And he isn't the most brilliant doubles player. We've seen him get quite frustrated when he seems to be playing with sort of slightly inadequate partners before. I do remember him playing with Viktor Troitsky once at the Davis Cup finals, and Troitsky could barely make a ball, and Djokovic could not hide his contempt. It was just amusing. It's just an amusing dynamic seeing, you know, the guy who's all about control and all about, you know, having things and bending things to his own will, it seems, having to rely on a doubles partner to sort of help him win this big thing for Serbia. I think that's just a fascinating element to the Davis Cup. But I agree. I think he will cope with the transition from Turin to Malaga. I'm not worried about that at all, but I am a little bit worried for Jannik Sinner, I suppose, just because of how different it's going to feel for him.
Is it more difficult, do you both think? I don't know whether there's any data we could glean, or at least anecdotally from the last couple of years, about how difficult stroke easy it is to win the Davis Cup finals in the current format if you're a single player, very strong player, like Andy Murray was in 2015, like Ivan Ljubicic was for Croatia, like Novak Djokovic is now. Is it more difficult to win the Davis Cup now when you've got three matches, it's best of three rubbers, they're best of three sets, versus how it used to be? Do you think, like, if you put Djokovic in the old format and he's still got to play three matches to win it, easier or harder to get through as that dominant singles player, but maybe with not such a strong team in depth and a doubles team?
I think best of three is more of a leveller, but I think best of three rubbers is perhaps the opposite. I don't know. I mean, my Davis Cup childhood was spent largely watching GB teams win with one player. You know, okay, there were some, and there was both Tim and Greg playing, but then they would team up for the doubles. GB men were no good at doubles back in the day. It was the singles players teaming up to play the doubles. Now, generally, it is doubles teams that seem to shine in the Davis Cup. So you could make the argument there's actually a bit more depth. I don't know. Matt, what do you think?
I'm trying to think of the winners we've had since the format it's changed, and I think I would say there's been a bit of a split, really, because I would say, you know, Auger Aliassime was essential to Canada last year. It felt like he sort of put the team on his back and led. But then, you know, we had the Russian Tennis Federation winning, and they had depth across the board rather than sort of one standout. In the Billie Jean King Cup, Leila Fernandez did, you know, sort of put Canada on her back this year and was able to sort of assert her influence on that team. The Swiss had Bencic sort of leading from the front. So I do still think having a standout singles player can really help. I suppose just looking at it mathematically, like one out of three is less than two out of five You know, it's, you're playing 40% of the matches in the old format, whereas it's only a third in this new format. But yeah, it's a very, very interesting point. I do think perhaps the fact that the ties are in such quick succession, you know, I think it's quite helpful to have some support, you know, just, I think, yeah, I don't think a one-man team can really win this new format. Like, you do need backup, because you're playing different opponents and there are different matchups, and the matches are happening thick and fast. Like, so I do think, obviously, it's helpful to have a great singles player, but I don't think we've seen a team win the new format with sort of only one person doing everything, which is, we did see that a little bit in the past. I think now it does perhaps place a greater emphasis on the team, but I haven't fully worked through that. So I would be interested to hear people's assessment.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch, isn't it? Because it was 2 years ago, I think, when Croatia beat Serbia and Djokovic winning his singles. And then he took on Mektić and Pavic in the doubles. And he just, it didn't matter how good he was. He just hadn't got enough cohesion with his partner versus what they'd got in order to prevail. And I think Djokovic is a better player now than he was 2 years ago. Extraordinarily to think. I think he's kind of maybe capable of bending things to his will, as you put it, even more now. So, and he wants it so much. You know, I think both of those two editions of the Davis Cup, that one and the one before, pre-COVID, do you remember how devastated he and his team were in that press conference afterwards when I think Tipsarevic was retiring? The whole thing was just so tough for them at that point. And then they went and won the ATP Cup and they were really jubilant about that, having done it as a country. But yeah, this is a big deal. The fact that he could be in the Maldives right now, but he doesn't want to be. He wants to be out there fighting for his country and seeing if he can finish it in what I was reading would be, in his view, his best ever season if he were to get the Davis Cup on top of the ATP Finals, three Grand Slams, one match win away from all four. So it really will be interesting. The other match there, we touched on it, Italy against the Netherlands is on Thursday morning. Matt, you were in the press conference with Netherlands. What sort of team have they got this time round?
Well, I started by getting told off by Paul Harhouse, That was,
oh, right, okay.
It wasn't a great start to the press conference. They were early.
What was that for?
Tennis players are never early.
Do you make him cry?
Tennis players are never early. And so I was late to the press conference because it was, you know, quite a walk to get there from where I was sitting. And there had apparently been an announcement that we weren't supposed to ask questions to the captain until after we'd asked all the questions to the players, because then the players were going to go off and practice and the captain was going to stay and take the questions. But I bowled in there with a question for Paul Harhouse. And he let me get all the way through the question and then said, no, I'm not answering that. You've got to ask a question for the players. So that wasn't the most pleasant experience. But they have a sneaky good team in the Netherlands. They always do. And I think Talon Griekspoor is a very tough match for Jannik Sinner indoors.
You know, talented player, isn't he?
He's very good. He just is.
Explosive.
Matt is always, when I'm with Matt and he says, I need a prediction from you during a Grand Slam, and I'm trawling through the order of play, and I'm last, you know, of seven of us to go in the predictions, and all of the good ones have gone, and it's absolute dreck. Matt is always trying to point me in the direction of Talon Griekspoor. Talon Griekspoor, Catherine, he's good. Always.
It's a very Matt sort of tip, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, okay. I stand by it.
But then there was a time. Who did you get Ilya Ivashka confused with?
Igor Gerasimov.
He sold me an absolute dud.
Okay, so Talon Griekspoor's one of their players. He's their number one.
Yeah, he's their number one. I mean, he played. Again, look, it wasn't peak Novak Djokovic, but he really pushed Novak Djokovic the other week in Paris, didn't he? 6-4 in the third. It was nip and tuck. He was impressive. I think he likes these conditions. Bortik van der Zandschulp is their number two, who, had this event been a few months ago, he'd been terribly out of form, but he has picked up indoors. He's put some results together in the last couple of weeks. So you would expect him to line up against, well, I don't know who's going to play number two for Italy. They've got Sonego, Mazzetti and Arnaldi. I would probably back Sonego the most, just sort of in this environment. I've seen him play well in Davis Cup before. But, you know, I don't think it's out of the question here that Netherlands can take that at least to the doubles. And then, yeah, they've got Wesley Koolhoff to play probably with either Griekspoor or Bortik van der Zandschulp. So, you know, they're pretty tough, the Netherlands. I think Italy are favourites, of course, but it's a tricky tie.
That should be another noisy one, Matt, because Italy bring fans, don't they? And Netherlands, I think, are another one that one of those two countries have bussed people in before last year, I seem to remember.
Yeah, well, the Netherlands in their orange suits, which now look like Jannik Sinner fans. There was loads of them last year, and they were courtside, and it was great. Yeah.
Okay, and actually, I mean, thinking about it, really, Serbia and Britain should be pretty noisy too, because from what I understand, Britain are bringing quite a few, and Novak Djokovic and his supporters come everywhere, really, don't they? And so, yeah, it's going to be very interesting. What do you think? You'd make Italy favourites, therefore, Matt. Serbia and Britain depleted because Andy Murray's injured. He's hurt his shoulder. He can't play. Dan Evans is out. So it's a very different team to the one that actually qualified for these finals, isn't it? Where does that leave Britain and their chances of actually winning this? Because the assumption would be you ain't going to win the first point.
Well, the number two singles play first, I think. So that would be Jack Draper, and then it would be Cameron Norrie lining up in the number one position against Novak Djokovic. It's interesting because Britain facing Serbia, let's be honest, they need to win the number two singles and they need to win the doubles, because even with a full strength squad, there's no one, you know, there's no one anyone's really got who you would put as favourite against Novak Djokovic. So let's write that one off. And I think that is Britain's strength. The number two singles, Jack Draper, that's a great player to have in that position. He's been in really good form recently. We know his potential and his upside is higher than his current ranking. So I think if he's able to be fit, you know, that's always the question mark with him. But he's got a lot of reps in recently, a lot of matches. I think Draper against whoever the Serbs line up, Laszlo Djera, Miomir Kecmanovic, you know, there's options for them. I don't know who they'll go with, but I think Draper has to back himself to try and get that point. Then you lose the number one singles and then you're into the doubles. And then you've got this situation where Britain have got two great doubles players in Joe Salisbury and Neil Skupski, who have obviously both been at the ATP finals, but they don't play together. You know, they you feel like they could be a brilliant team, but we don't really know. And I think there's a reason they haven't played that much together before. And I think it's probably because they maybe don't gel that well as a team. So they sort of look good on paper, two double specialists, but how good are they in reality up against Djokovic and someone else? He did enter the doubles in Paris with Kecmanovic, I noticed, a couple of weeks ago. So maybe that was a hint that would be their preferred pairing. I don't know. So, I again, like all these ties, I think that's very, very close because I make Britain the favourite in the first singles, Serbia the favourite in the second singles, and then the doubles feels like a bit of a coin flip.
It's going to be very interesting. Catherine, do you think right now that actually the more dangerous of the two British singles players is Draper? And if so, that's probably good news for Leon Smith that actually he just happens to be number two.
Both those things, 100%. I think that's fallen incredibly, incredibly well for Leon Smith. And I would, even if Andy Murray and Dan Evans were both fit, I'd be wanting Jack Draper to play it too, which means making a sacrificial lamb to Novak Djokovic in the number one singles in that opening tie. And I don't think it would matter which one of those it was. So in terms of the Serbia tie, I kind of think it's those injuries and neither here nor there. And
maybe Evans in the doubles.
Evans in the doubles is the critical one, and the fact that he and Neil Skupski are a well-worn partnership. Now, I know Skupski and Salisbury have played together and had success together. I think 2021 was the last time they did an event in San Diego, maybe, and back in 2018 as well. But I honestly don't have any behind the scenes information about this, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but logically, there is so much upside to British doubles players. So, you know, it can be tough to make a living in doubles. You've got to maximise wherever you can. There is so much upside to, particularly for Brits or for players from a Grand Slam nation, to play with a countryman or woman in terms of sponsorship, the Olympics, logistics, you know, training bases, all of that. I think all other things being equal, you'd want to play with a countryman, and they don't. So there must be a reason for that. Doesn't mean it's some drastic they hate one another reason or they're absolutely rubbish together reason, but they're obviously not a dream pairing, or else I believe they'd be playing together because there are so many reasons to do so. So that does give me pause, but equally, Djokovic with insert someone to inferior to Djokovic's name here is also rarely a completely convincing partnership. So I do find that really compelling, and I do find Jack Draper in this competition compelling because there is not a number two singles player in this competition that I wouldn't give him a really good chance against in the form that he seems to be in. It does worry me how the draw has fallen and that GB play their quarterfinal on Thursday, which means it would be a lot of tennis in the space of 4 days for a player whose body has broken down in the past. But as Matt says, he's got reps in recently. And maybe a test is what his body needs. You know, he needs to get battle hardened. That's what's been missing for him. So I find, obviously as a British person, I've got kind of added interest in GB, but I do find them really intriguing in this competition.
It's quite interesting how the injuries have simplified things for Leon Smith. I think Britain didn't qualify for this finals last year. They lost in the groups. And I just couldn't help but think that the makeup of the British team was suddenly so different to anything Leon Smith had ever sort of had before. You know, it used to be so clear. It was Andy Murray and it was Andy and Jamie in the doubles. And I think sometimes having fewer options is maybe helpful. You know, stops you overthinking, perhaps. And now, of course, he would love to have Dan Evans available and he would love to have Andy Murray available, I'm sure. But, you know, then you've got a lot of selection decisions to make and you have to justify those decisions and all of that. But now it's just, right, Jack Draper, go out there, try and win your number two singles. It's all very straightforward. And that might be a help, but I do think, you know, he will regret not having the options, perhaps if they even do get past Serbia, where maybe the number one singles suddenly becomes something that if you had Dan Evans available, you might have been able to win. But with Cameron Norrie outside of, you know, his best form at the moment, that it feels like a tough ask for Norrie to win a match here. But maybe he can find a spark. But yeah, it's a much clearer task for Britain than it would have been if everyone was available. And there are advantages and disadvantages to that.
I think the single biggest gift to Leon Smith, there are upsides to the injuries, as we've said, but the single biggest gift is Jack Draper's ranking being so low. And the guarantee that no matter who you put in at one, injuries or not, he's your number two player, because that's so often decisive. Who's got the best second best player, and he's better than his ranking, obviously, because his ranking is so injury determined. But he's fit.
So is anybody picking Britain to beat Serbia here?
I think I might have just talked myself into it. You know.
I've still got to go for Serbia.
I'm edging Serbia because of the Djokovic factor, of course.
Yeah, and I would go for Italy as well. I think I'm not convinced though. I think you're right. It's a lot on Jannik Sinner that.
I think I might go the Netherlands in that one.
Yeah, they're very, very interesting. Okay, well, we'll see how it all unfolds. It's all going to get underway starting tomorrow, Tuesday at 4 p.m. local time. So the winner of the first quarterfinal between Canada and Finland will play against the winner of the second quarterfinal, Australia and Czechia, on Friday in the semis. Then on Saturday at an earlier start, actually, of 12 o'clock, the Friday one's at 4 p.m. again. On Saturday, it's 12 o'clock midday, and it'll be either Italy or the Netherlands against Serbia or Britain. And then the final is 4 o'clock on Sunday. Is there anything else, Matt, from your time spent in press conferences over the last 24 hours that you would like to relate before we get on to episode mascot? And it's a good one this week.
Do you know, I don't think there is. I'm happy to get on to the good mascot.
Excellent. Because I really enjoyed starting with Finland, a little surprisingly, and going very deep on that and really enjoying it. And now we get to go sort of full circle from all the slight doom and gloom of Finland in November to looking at beautiful pictures of Luna and Maggie frolicking in the grass on a lovely summer's day. And Luna and Maggie are owned by Holmes Finch. Maggie is a rescue who's been with us, that's what Holmes writes, for 11 years. She's a mix of miniature Pinscher and Boston Terrier. Maggie is the sweetest dog we've ever had, and loves nothing more than laying in the sunshine. Luna is a six-year-old Havanese. Her favourite activity is taking long walks with her humans and playing soccer with one of her many toys. And don't they look happy, Catherine? And don't they look like friends?
Yeah, that is a shot of sunshine in the arm, that photo. A Havanese is what a friend of the pod, Matt Futterman, of The Athletic, has recently acquired. And I've been reassuring him all the way along the journey that they are gorgeous dogs and he will fall in love eventually. Because they really, really are. And the and Luna, no, sorry, it's Maggie that's the pincher Boston Terrier cross. What a lovely cross. What a dignified lady she looks. Yeah, they're gorgeous.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Holmes, for making them mascots of the Tennis Podcast. And if you would like your pet or pets to be a mascot of the Tennis Podcast in 2024, from the 8th of December, you will be able to, because that's when we open it all up. So keep your eye on our newsletter. If you're not already subscribed, get over there. You'll get access to Matt's stat every single week of the year and daily during the Grand Slam. So he's producing about 100 stats a year, and they are very, very thoroughly researched and thought through.
Some are better than others.
They're all great, aren't they, Catherine? And we know how good they are, because once in a while, Matt has to have like a week off, and then Catherine and I have to come up with one. And then we realise just how hard it is. Catherine's better at the concepts. Yes, and I'm not really good at any of it. But so anyway, we've had one go, and we'll probably have to do two or three next year as well. But Matt will be doing about 100 of them next year. We'll also be doing our predictions all year long as well. So that's what you get access to if you signed up to our newsletter. So make sure you are. We have our own mascots as well. And they will also be available for 2024 if you'd like to have your pet be our mascot. I've got Maisie, and Maisie has been the most excellent mascot this year after Darwin dumped me and went for Matt. It's okay, Darwin, I forgive you. But I've just romped away with the predictions competition, which has been magnificent. So Maisie, thank you so much. Catherine's got Xenia. And Catherine's in second position. So Xenia and Catherine are a fairly decent team as well. Billie Jean, the dog, is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah and Drew. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Bob Seifert in Boston.
All right, Bob.
Bob,
hello, Bob.
Says that he completed his lifetime fan grand slam this year by attending Roland Garros.
Oh, it's one of my favorite. Good effort. Those.
So Bob did it the same way as I did it, by turning up to Roland Garros last.
Yeah.
And no doubt being very pleasantly surprised.
Matt and I, of course, road tripped to, well, not quite Boston, but very close to Boston in the summer. Yeah.
Bob Bryan, being a tennis player, Bob, who we can highlight. And actually, Matt, no United States at the Davis Cup finals.
Correct, yes. That's why we've got Finland, because Finland beat the US in the group stages in September.
Yeah, it's quite something, isn't it? Okay, well, thank you very much, Bob, for being a friend of the Tennis Podcast.
We've also got Ted Kurth in Chicago.
Like Ted Tinling, the great designer of all the outfits of Billie Jean King's era.
Very good. Yeah, Chicago. Never been to Chicago, but I'd
home
like to.
Home of the White Sox and the Bears and all that.
And Ted.
Yep. And the Laver Cup a couple of years ago. Yep.
All the big things. Ted is a proud graduate of the University of Virginia, which he says has won 6 of the last 10 NCAA men's team championships. And it's where Danielle Collins and Brandon Nakashima both went there, apparently.
Whoa. That's pretty good alumni, isn't
Interesting.
It?
Interesting.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Ted.
I bet it's fun playing on a US college tennis team.
Well, Danielle Collins certainly looks pretty well adjusted to life, having gone through the whole thing. So, yeah, good advert. And as does Ben Shelton.
Thank you, Ted.
Thirdly, we've got Stefan Kapolak, in Seattle, Washington.
Hey, Seattle, home of my Seahawks, who lost in the last kick of the game last night after I stayed up till after midnight watching them. What a waste of time that was. Anyway.
Didn't you win in the last kick
correct.
Of the game last
but
week,
though? I'm still not happy.
Feast or famine. You're wearing your Seahawks jumper, though.
David's always wearing a Seahawks jumper.
He is always.
I've got three of them, so I just rotate. Okay.
Stefan says, if anyone has any stories or memories about Yelena Yankovic that they could share, I would be grateful. She's my favourite player. And I did remember that we could tease a friends episode, because we did one recently where we had to talk about who we thought was the best player not to have won a slam in the last, I can't remember what the parameters were, 10 or 15 years. Someone
yes,
went
someone
for Yelena
said
Yankovic.
Me. I did that.
You've ruined the tease,
that was
David.
The tease, David.
Oh, sorry.
Well, anyway.
Anyway, like Stefan Edberg and Stefan Djokovic.
And by the way, you know, when I think of Yelena Yankovic, I always think of the 2008 US Open when she reached the final, because my days were just dominated by going out searching for people to interview to preview the Andy Murray-Roger Federer match coming up the next day. That's when I ran into a doorstepped Don King coming out of the Serena Williams against Yelena Yankovic match. But she was defeated in the final.
That interview is available on a Tennis Relived somewhere as well, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is, actually. Mm.
And finally, we have one of our very favourite people, Sophie Smith.
Hey!
Oh!
Lovely Sophie.
We love Sophie.
Always with us.
Yeah. She was...
Sophie is so supportive.
She was one of my
supportive.
Groupies at the history conference.
Yeah.
Splendid.
Yeah, and she came to Shrewsbury. Yeah, we love you, Sophie.
Thanks so much
for
being
you.
A friend of the Tennis Podcast, for all your support, and for all of you for listening, for being friends. If you're not already a friend, become one. Become one for Christmas if you want, and you'll get loads and loads of Tennis Podcast extras over the course of the next year. We've produced more than 50 bonus editions of the Tennis Podcast just for friends. Tennis Relived, Q&As with us, where you get to send your questions in. Grand Slam review shows, which are some of my favourites, where we get voice notes from lots of our favourite people and contributors, and get a different take on all the Grand Slams. They'll be coming your way, as usual, in 2024. You can also make a gift of the Tennis Podcast to become a friend if you like too. It's all there if you go to tennis.supportingcast.fm, and the link is in your show notes as well. So Matt, off you go to bed bright and early tomorrow for research, although you haven't got to be up until 4 p.m. by the looks of things.
You're forgetting dinner, David. It is 9 o'clock in Spain, which is still early, so that's in my future.
Marvellous. Okay. Well, Catherine's already had a nap, so it's not bedtime yet for Catherine. She's a bit of a night owl. I won't be hearing from you till about 11 a.m. tomorrow.
Chiefs Eagles tonight, David.
Okay. Fine. Catherine just knows this stuff.
Given that I'm on a weird time zone.
I'd love to have a conversation between Catherine of 4 years ago and Catherine now about the NFL. And see how that unfolded.
I sort of would too.
Okay.
Growth.
Don't think I'll be able to organise that. But anyway, lovely to talk to you both. Lovely to talk to you, lovely listeners. And we'll be back with another edition of the Tennis Podcast. And every night over the week of the Davis Cup Finals, we'll be with you. See you soon.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.